When you see something unique in someone that isn't something you see in everyone else, there's a very good chance that that person that you're speaking life into does not see that about themselves.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Let's Be Real podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Eunice, and I believe we need all the help we can get when it comes to living a full and free life. Here you'll find honest truth, practical tips, and perspective changes that help you embrace the miracle that is your life. It's an in-process conversation that's going to be unfiltered, and it better be fun. Let's get real together.
Hey, my friends, welcome back to Let's Be Real. I am so glad to be with you today. If you're joining me on YouTube, you can see that I'm wearing my dog sweater today, which my children think is ridiculous. And I'm kind of like, you know what? If I want to wear an ironic sweater with a huge dog on it, I'm going to, because I am middle age, which means I get to make these decisions if I want to. So I hope you enjoy my dog sweater today if you're joining me on YouTube. And I'm excited for what we're going to get into today. We're in the middle of an amazing series with incredible guests. But every now and then something comes up that I just love to give you guys a little mini coaching session out of one of the conversations that I've had with you somewhere along the way. So this has been an amazing and crazy speaking season. Man, after COVID, like coming back into life, coming back into 3D, getting to be all around the country in the last few weeks has been really fun. And just a reminder to me that we're all human, we're all facing so many of the same things, men, women, Midwest, West Coast, East Coast, wherever you are, we really are going through a lot of the same things. And we're all trying to kind of rebuild our lives and rebuild our relationships after this kind of strained and distant time. So out of that, I want to talk about what it means to speak life into people today. And then I'm also going to answer a couple of reader questions. So we're going to get to that as well. So before we do, just want to make sure that you guys know how to stay connected. If you're not on my email list, you may want to jump on that, because that's the place where you'll find out where I'm speaking live, when next projects come out, some of the different things that we've got going on, coaching groups, etc. So if you haven't yet jumped on that email list, I would love to invite you to do that, and we'll put in the show notes for you. And also, if you haven't liked or subscribed, whatever channel you use, YouTube, Spotify, iTunes, whatever, wherever you are, if you guys are able and want to leave a review for the podcast, it would be amazing. It's super helpful. It helps other people find it as well, and kind of keeps us going too. So we're going to get into it today. We're going to talk about speaking life. I'm basing this concept because it is something that is said in the church. You may have heard it. People talk about this idea of, I'm going to speak life into people. And it's kind of a weird phrase if you don't know what people are talking about. But actually, at the end of the day, it's an incredible leadership principle. It's an incredible parenting principle. It's an incredible relationship principle, this concept that we have the ability to speak life. People say this phrase, and it's like, what does that mean? Does it mean to encourage someone? Is it like, good job? You know, is it tell someone that you think they're pretty, that you like their outfit? Like, what does it really look like to speak life? So this phrase is not just a phrase that some pastor made up that spread through like the church ecosystem. This is a phrase actually from Proverbs 18. It's Proverbs 18:21, and it says, the tongue has the power of life and death. The tongue has the power of life and death. Is there not something more true than that? All of us have been on the receiving end of somebody's words that have the power of death in them. I was just talking with a good friend of mine who traveled with me this week, and we were just reminiscing about middle school. And by reminiscing, I mean I was bearing my soul about my middle school struggles. And I was like, oh my gosh, I had these friends in middle school, and to me, the equivalent of this is like texting now, but at this time, you know, there was no texting, obviously, and we would pass notes. And these notes, like some of these notes would be so cruel. It would be like, you're just trying to be in fifth grade government, somebody's passing you a note, and in that note, it's like 18 things that are wrong with you, or like ways that you are so mean and like such a bad person, and you just are interrupted in your stream of life by this note, this like cruel note being passed to you. Now, I don't know, maybe I'm the only one who had friends like this, but like some of us really struggled in middle school. And by some of us, I mean me. So some people have had that experience, or you've gotten that text, or you've been able, like you've misinterpreted it and you don't know what to do with it, because our words have the power of death in them. They bring violence into our life. They can, and they can feel violent. But on the other side of it, words also have the power of life. And as we engage and move through the world, understanding that you've been given the ability to speak life into people in a way that our souls really need is an incredible skill. And more than a skill, it's really a treasure. It's a gift to be able to do this. So I want to give you an example of what I mean by this, because there's kind of your run-of-the-mill encouragement, right? Just like the things that we share, the things that we say. Then there's this more intentional way of how you might engage with someone that you are in relationship with, whether that's a child, someone on your work team, a friend, in a very, very specific way. So let me give you an example of this from raising our kids. So one of my concerns with our kids would be that the encouragement that we would give them would in some way reveal values that we had that didn't fully embrace all that we believe, right? So an example of that is your kid does well on a test and you're like, good job, you're so smart. Well, the kid now begins to think to be smart means to always do well, and to get encouragement means that I have to do well. And now I'm sort of like, I'm modeling and valuing success, right, on accident. It's not because I want to do that. It's a wonderful, loving thing to be like, you're so smart, you did great on that test, or to affirm or reward doing well in school. But doing well and being successful according to the world is not the most important value to me. And if that's the only time that I'm encouraging my child, or that's the particular flavor in which I encourage my child, or if I always tell my daughter, you look so pretty today, and that becomes the way that she feels like she's gonna get love, then there can be something that happens in us that connects those two things. Well, I'm only loved if I'm pretty, or I'm only loved and valued when I'm successful. And so we can accidentally make these connections that we may not mean to make. And that always concerned me when I was a mom. Obviously at that time, I was in a season where I was in, as a therapist, I was working all the time. I'm listening to people's stories and I'm like, how am I gonna do this differently? What does it look like to speak life into my child, not just when they're successful or when they're pretty, or when they do great and when they win a sports, you know, game, but what is it like to speak life about the values that we actually hold dear, that really embrace all that it is to be a person who flourishes? So this speak life idea became this little kind of three-part concept that I would engage the kids with, and that I've now found that I love to use with people that I work with, people who work for me, relationships, friendships, a very, very specific, and when I'm just out doing ministry, when I see if God gives me just a way to see somebody, a leader perhaps who is discouraged, like how I might speak into them. So here's the three things that I do. The first is that I note the behavior. I actually speak of what I'm seeing with my eyes. I don't just assume that they understand how they move through the world, right? So I'll say, this is such a dumb example, but I was just in my car and I realized that my oldest kid, he pulled the seat up, like he moved his seat forward. He made himself more uncomfortable. So the friends that were getting in the back seat would have more leg room. And I didn't ask him to do that. So that's a very, very small example, but it would be like, hey Des, I noticed this morning that you pull your seat up when your friends get in the back seat. Okay, very small thing, right? A small behavior, but I'm pointing to the action. I want to make sure I point to the action. I told one of the women leaders this week that was leading an event that I was at, I said, I notice that you have a non-anxious presence. I notice that when you move around and you speak to other leaders, you have a smile on your face. You have a lot of joy, even though I know that you're thinking about a lot of details, right? So I'm going to name the behavior that I'm noticing. And then I'm going to say, I want to connect this to a virtue. So I'm going to connect the behavior to a character trait. So it's not just successful or pretty or you won, but I want to say something like in my example from this morning in the car, Des, when I notice that you pull your seat up, when your friends get in the back, that I see in you a kindness or I see in you an unselfishness, or I see in you an empathy for other people. So I'm going to name that character virtue that I see. So another example is when my kids have done well on a test. Hey, I know you did well on that test, but what I saw you do was that you were very faithful to turn in your homework. I noticed that you are very faithful to do and be diligent around your homework, and I saw that you put in a lot of effort, okay? So now it's not about the success, it's about the effort, the thing that we can control, right, in life. The thing that I want to elevate in my kid is what the virtue is, right? The thing I wanted to elevate in that leader as I watched her lead was the virtue underneath it, right? So, hey, I noticed when you moved around, you had a smile on your face, you had a lot of joy, you're not moving in like a frantic way, and you exhibit a non-anxious presence, which makes other people feel confident. So I'm going to name the virtue. And then if it's the right occasion, if it's the right relationship, I may even connect that to a stronger vision for the person's life. Now, I'm not in charge of a vision for a person's life, but I think that we're in a culture that kind of thinks nobody's in charge of anything and everyone just needs to figure it out on their own. And I'm like, there is nothing wrong with speaking boldly about what you see in someone's life when it is speaking life. So if I'm going to speak boldly to somebody, and another example is I have a high school intern with me this week, and she has a very peaceful presence. And I've noticed that she notices people really well and engages with them really well. And I've said to her before, have you considered counseling as a career? Now, I don't know that she's supposed to be a counselor. I don't know. But why wouldn't, when we see gifts and virtues in somebody, why wouldn't we speak life into them, speak a vision into that? So this woman leader, to go back to that example, okay, you are moving around with a non-anxious presence. I know you have a lot on your mind. I want you to know that the confidence that you have gives confidence to others. And I just said to this female, I said, hey, I do this a lot. And I want you to know that's a beautiful quality that you have that not everyone has. So sometimes people also need to know when they have a unique gifting, you see something in them that's different. Because our gifting, if it's a true gift, it feels natural to us. It just feels like a part of who we are. And a lot of times we don't elevate those things or we're not confident in those things because it just feels normal. It just feels natural to us. And we sometimes need others in our life who are able to say, hey, I see something in you. And that something that I see is special. It's not something that I see in every other person. So the ability to say, I see in you that you can sort of unravel complicated problems, or I see in you a spirit of positivity that you bring to every interaction we're in. When you see something unique in someone that isn't something you see in everyone else, there's a very good chance that that person that you're speaking life into does not see that about themselves and has not had someone say, hey, I want to affirm in you this unique way that you move through the world. And maybe even if I have the opportunity to elevate that to a vision for your life, hey, the way you move through the world, the way that you solve problems, that can be used in so many different ways. Or man, your leadership gifts, you know, God's going to call on you with those leadership gifts. I hope that you'll step in to opportunities that you're given through your life with those leadership gifts. And we're never too old. We never outgrow the need for someone to speak life into us. We never outgrow the need for people to engage with who they see us to be. But to speak life is not just this like blanket encouragement. It's not just like good job. You know, those things are important. But if you want to take it to the next level, if you really want to develop people, if you want to bring that sort of culture into your home as a parent, if you want to bring that culture onto your team as a leader, start to elevate the way that you speak life into people and be a little bit more intentional about it. Make sure that you can point to specific examples and then connect those examples to a virtue. And then if you can connect that virtue to an elevated vision for how that plays out in their life or what you see in them that's unique, it will bless the people in your life. Like, you will be amazed at what God does with that. You can do this with your boss. You can do this with your spouse. You can do this with a friend. You know, what would it be like for you to be more intentional with the way that you speak life? And some of us, this comes really naturally. Some of us, it doesn't, but none of us are excused from being a part of speaking life into others, because the tongue truly does have the power of life or death. And when we speak poorly of others, when we gossip, when we tear other people down, we're using this powerful tool, right, for evil. But when we actually are intentional about the way we speak and we speak intentional life into people, we are using this incredible power that we have for good. And that is a pretty cool thing. So, speaking life, I want to challenge you this week to look for an opportunity to try it out. It may feel a little bit awkward. Your kid might roll their eyes at you. That's okay. Doesn't mean they didn't hear you. Doesn't mean it didn't go in. So find a way, find even a very, very small behavior that you want to speak, you want to use as a way to speak life into someone, and see what happens next. It's pretty cool. All right, you guys, we are going to transition now into a few listener questions, some stuff that has come up. Okay, I want to answer like a pretty easy one, maybe a little bit lighter, and then one that's a little bit more complicated. And I'm going to do my best to answer those well. So the first one is a question that I've received, and it's a small thing, but it's kind of in that whole Miracle Moments, the last book I wrote about relationships. And the question is, I have a friend that I get together with, and they always have their cell phone out at our meeting. So wherever we're doing, whenever I have coffee, and it's just, I don't like it. It's distracting to me. I don't like that they have their phone face up in our meeting. Is there a way for me to engage that? So that's kind of the spirit of the question. It was a little bit longer than that, but I just rehashed it for you guys. So great question. Okay. Awesome question about cell phones. We are living in a world at a connected age, but it's also a distracted age, right? And there actually has been studies that have shown that having your phone out, even with face down, even a phone out face down, is distracting to people. They feel less heard by you if your phone is out than they would if it was not out. Now, of course, there's always exceptions. And this is the thing, is we feel all those exceptions, right? We feel like, well, what if my child's school needs me? What if this, what, you know, we sort of feel like we have to be constantly in every minute checking our phone or being available to our phone. But really, do we? Like, do you really have to be that available? Now, maybe if you're on call and you're a heart surgeon, maybe you do need to be that available. But one of the things that you can do is, I like to treat a cell phone like it's another person in the room. Like, if I'm going to have this cell phone out, I'm basically telling the person across from me that there's something else going on that might be more important to them. That's what you're saying. So if there is nothing more important going on than the person in front of you, put your phone away. Don't even have it out, because it tells the person across from you, I want to give you my undivided attention. Like, this is what I'm doing right now. I'm not doing anything else. If there is a reason that you need your phone out, one of the things that you can do is just acknowledge that. It's just so kind and respectful to say to someone, hey, I'm expecting a call from my kid's doctor. I hate having my phone out, but I am going to leave it out for that reason. Great. I've now acknowledged that there's like a third party in the room, and I'm not just allowing it to be like, oh, I'm just going to glance down at my phone and see like the latest Instagram headline while you're talking to me. Because every time I do that, I'm basically saying what's happening here on my phone is more important than what's happening between you and I. And I should only do that if what is important is actually more important, or if there is something that I need to attend to. I think it's really important to act like your phone is like a person tapping you on the shoulder, interrupting your meeting. So if someone tapped you on the shoulder and interrupted your meeting, and you just ignored the person across from you and just started talking, it would be so rude. You would never do that. You would say to the person that you were talking to, could you hold on just a moment? I'm so sorry for this interruption, but I do need to like deal with this. So when you let your phone be that interruption, you're doing that to other people. This is why we don't feel connected to others. This is why we feel awkward. We don't feel like we're able to engage, because we're not creating spaces and time where we can actually engage in a way that feels like allows us to flourish. It feels like we're close, right? So to the friend who's like thinking those things because their friend's phone is out. So if it's distracting to you and it's a close friend, you could say, hey, is there something going on? That one of the things you can do first is lead by example. And you could say like, I'm going to put my phone away because I don't want to be distracted. You don't have to necessarily call them out. They may get the hint. They may just be like, oh, I should put my phone away. Another thing that you can do if you need to take it to another level, because it really is like they're like actually distracted by their phone, like you know they are, is you might say, hey, is there anything going on that you're expecting? Are you expecting a call or anything? And if they're like, oh, no, you could just say, you know, my attention span is so cool. You know, I get distracted so easily. Would you mind if we don't put our phones out just while we're catching up? So that might be one way that you could just gently sort of put it back on yourself and say like, man, it distracts me, you know? So that could be a way to take it to the next level. You may just have to be okay with it unless the person actually looks at their phone a lot while you're talking with them, in which case you could even, sometimes I'll do this, you could even just like put your hand on the table and be like, do you need to get that? Do you need to take a phone call? Is there something that you need to deal with? Again, a gentle way to sort of model to the other person, hey, you're leaving our conversation when you do that. So I'm going to act like you're leaving our conversation. Now, some of you guys might be like, oh my gosh, I would never do that. Like, I don't want to have conflict. But I just feel like, you know, if it's a friend and they want to attend to you and they don't realize that they're doing something that comes across as distracted and disrespectful, like, don't we owe it to our friends to just gently be like, oh, is there something going on that you need to take care of? And if they feel bad, you can be like, I don't want you to feel bad. You're important to me and I want us to be connected. So depending on the level of friendship, that could be a couple of ways that you could engage with the old cell phone issue. Okay, next question. I thought that one was easy, but that was a little bit tougher than I thought. Okay, so here's our next question. The next question is about some brokenness in a family. So the family basically has the mom in the family, adult children. The adult children are in a conflict, and the conflict that the adult children in is keeping them from engaging, being together for holidays, etc. And as the grandma, this is breaking this woman's heart. How do you handle adult children's conflicts? Okay. This is super challenging, right? This is where boundaries really do come into play, because we have to ask ourselves, what do I have agency over? Like, what is within my authority? Okay. So God has given us agency and authority. It means that there are things that are our purview, are things to be able to exert our power in. A lot of us are confused about our agency. Many, many people make their agency zero. So my life is just a reaction. I have no control over what happens around me. If my adult children want to come into my home and fist fight, then they can, because I don't have any power. And that's ridiculous. But that's an example. I gave you a dramatic one of believing that you have no agency. Many, many people fall into the category of believing they have more agency. They have not learned to change the circle of their agency in their family as their children grow, okay? So as a mother of adult children, your agency is almost really none over adult children. Like, they are responsible for their own lives. They are responsible for their own choices at this point. That's logically true. It's not emotionally true. They're still your children. You still love them. You still desire the best for them. But you've got to ask yourself, where do I have agency, and how might I use my boundaries and my agency to bring about possibly a peaceful solution, or to bring this conflict to resolution? So one of the places that you do have a boundary is around the way that you invite them in. So let's say you were having a meal at your home and you invited your adult children to that meal. You could say to them, hey, in my home, I want us to be respectful in the way that we talk to one another, and I want us to seek peace with each other. You could say that up front. So you're setting an expectation that this is the way I want us to engage together when we're in my home. That gives them the opportunity with their own agency to say, no thanks, mom, I'm not coming. Now, in no way am I saying that this isn't heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking when there's conflict going on. It's heartbreaking when your children don't get along. It's heartbreaking that they would allow conflict to keep them from experiencing you. But one of the things that you need to do in your agency is decide how you want to proactively engage. That's all you can do, is you can present choices to your children, and you can tell them about the negative effects the experience is having on you as well. So you can say something like, hey, when you guys won't resolve a conflict or choosing to stay like this, I'm sad because I'm losing time with you and I'm not able to spend time with my grandchildren. could we work on finding a compromise? Okay, so you're inviting them to the table. You're inviting them to a choice. So many people get confused about how much agency they have. They either walk through life thinking, I've just got to let life happen and I can't do anything about it. And I've just got to put up with all the stuff around me. And then some people have way too much agency and they think that because I raised these children who are now adults, I still have a responsibility for them. I still have the right to speak into their lives, to tell them how to do what they want to do. And most of us are trying to find our way between no agency and too much agency. But what you can do is you can have a vulnerable, honest conversation where you say, hey, these behaviors are having this impact on me. And this is the impact that I see it's having on your children, on your families. And you can offer choices. You can offer compromises. You can offer options. And it's your children's right to take those options or not, but it is absolutely your right to name your reality, to name what you're experiencing, to offer solutions and say, this is what I would love to see. Is this a choice that we can make? And it's their right to say no to those options, right? And that may be very painful and it may create a rift in the family. And that is so, so hard. And then you've got to deal with the reality that you have and ask, okay, based on this reality, what is it that I really want? What is it that I truly desire? Do I want to go after my adult child's heart? Do I want to see if I can spend time with my grandchildren in some way if this family division is going to continue? It is not good to be in this place, but it doesn't mean that you can't have choices, that you can't actually engage in a creative solution or offer choices. So don't let the pain of it or the past of it keep you from staying in the present and saying, I can still say and name the reality as I see it, and I can offer choices and ways forward. It's up to my adult children if they want to take those choices or not. Okay, you guys, we've covered a lot today. Speaking life, dealing with cell phones, family division. We have covered the gamut on relationships today. Thank you so much for joining us. We're going to be back next week, and I'll see you guys then. Hey, thanks for tuning in to the Let's Be Real podcast. If you have a question for the show, you can send it to me at Nicole@NicoleEunice.com. And hey, if you're enjoying this, we'd love for you to like, subscribe, share it with your friends, pass it on, shout it from the rooftops, whatever you feel like doing, because the reality is, let's get as many people getting real as possible. Talk to you soon.